This is the second. I've got it all on tape. This is the second. This is the third part today. The second part today of the history. So the Great Irish Famine so became extremely important and pushed a million people out of the country. But one of the interesting things is that a tremendous solidity of Irish identity. So it's quite easy, if you're in the United States, it's quite easy to find people who have never lived in Ireland, but who feel Irish. That's a very, very, very normal thing to do. And this forced emigration is an important part of that. Now, the situation after the Irish famine, there was still a tremendous amount of conflict between tenant farmers, so who were renting their land, and English landlords. And indeed, sometimes the English landlords would expel people from the land because they didn't pay the rent or they hadn't paid the rent. And there was the Irish Land League who had an idea to solve this terrible situation. And so every now and then they would assassinate a landlord. And then for 10 years in that region, no landlords would expel anybody because they were frightened. This is the Irish Land League, what they sometimes called the Land War, but it wasn't really a war. It was just that when people were being expelled from the land and watching their children die of starvation, they can come to extreme measures. So Ireland became to be known as a place of tremendous social unrest. And one of the proposed solutions to this from sections of the middle classes, but with support from peasantry, was the idea of home rule. Because since 1801, all the decisions about Ireland had been made. Remember, of course, Ireland is still united at this time and part of the United Kingdom. You know, everything is decided in London. After 1801, the island does not have a separate parliament. And so the campaign for home rule became the huge campaign of the second half of the 19th century, well, especially 1870 to 1914. What was home rule? Home rule is not independence. Home rule is having an autonomous parliament. So that in London, the big decisions about foreign policy and military policy and so on would be made, but Irish questions would only be debated in Dublin. And this was this rose in popularity. Many members of parliaments from Ireland, who went to the parliament in Westminster, of course, would defend this idea, and in particular, they would be disruptive. There was a whole period where the Irish Home Rule members of Parliament in London would stop the Parliament from working. They would give speeches. They would speak for 12 hours just to block the Parliament. Yeah, that's something we've seen in the United States as well. This also caused tremendous divisions in Ireland, because in the north of Ireland, where there were more Protestants and more money, Belfast was one of the richest industrial ports in the world the 1880s, 1890s. They made some of the best ships in the world. Unfortunately, the only ship which they made which is famous is the Titanic, but which is bad news, but in fact most of their ships did not sink. Okay, most of the ships did not sink. Incidentally, if you are in Belfast, the Titanic Museum is amazing. Absolutely amazing place to go. So in the north of Ireland, there was a whole section of the Protestant population who were violently opposed to home rule. So violently opposed that they began to form a private militia to buy arms and to prepare a civil war. This is in 1910, 1911. And this led to, they also had some support from sections of the British Army. By 1913, they were close to a civil war. There was not a civil war, but it was could easily happen. Meanwhile, the British Parliament had finally, very slowly, voted the idea that there should be a Parliament in Dublin. One of the reasons is to calm down the social unrest in Ireland, and one of the reasons is that the Liberal Party, which was a very powerful party in London, depended on the Irish MPs to have a majority, so they had political reasons. And so in 1912, they finally managed to get the House of Commons to vote for Home Rule. The decision was made for Home Rule in 1914. And then, of course, the First World War began. And so it was like, let's forget, we'll see after the war. And so the Home Rule Act was passed in 1914, and another act was passed suspending the application of this Home Rule War, this Home Rule Law, until the end of the war. Now, the First World War divided the Irish totally. Because, so in Ireland you had the Unionists, mostly in the north, but not only in the north, mostly Protestants, almost all Protestants, and they're Unionists because they want to maintain the union with England. And then you had the Nationalists, the Irish Nationalists. Some of them wanted Home Rule and independent, an autonomous parliament. Some of them wanted complete independence. When the First World War broke out and Britain wanted everybody to join the army, it was a volunteer army at the beginning in 1914, it was a volunteer army, not conscripted. Well, the Irish were very divided. Of course, the Unionists had no problem. The Unionists said, yes, let's join the army. The British Empire is our empire. We want the British Empire to win. So the Unionists had no problem. The Nationalists were divided. One section said, yes, let's support Britain in the war. And if we are enthusiastic supporters and we send lots of soldiers, then after the war, they will be nice to us and they will give us home rule. Spoiler. Doesn't work that way. Okay. And then finally you had other nationalists who said, what are you talking about? We want independence for Ireland. Where is the British army? They're in France. Now is the right time to let's have a revolution. It's the time the British army is in France or in Egypt. We can win now. And so indeed in 1916 there was the Easter Rising in Dublin, a revolt, an armed revolt. Several hundred armed men took control of what building do you occupy in the beginning of the 20th century? You want to control a country. What's the most important building to occupy? You'll not guess, the General Post Office. All the telephones, all the telegrams are controlled from, just like today, very often you occupy television studios so you can get the monopoly of the television. Yeah. At the time, the General Post Office was important. And if you go to Dublin to the General Post Office today, you can still see the bullet holes in the wall and pictures of the leaders of the Easter Rising, who today are national heroes in Ireland. They were hoping that if they organised this revolt with a few hundred men in Dublin, the rest of Ireland would rise up and join them. Spoiler, it doesn't always work like that. People did not rise up and join them. They lost. The British army were mostly in France, but they came back. And the leaders of the Easter Rising were all executed immediately. So it appeared to be a failure. However, the execution of the leaders made people so angry in Ireland that it allowed a few years later Irish independence. And indeed, once the First World War was over, there was another war, the Irish against the English, an independence war, 1919, which ended in a compromise. Let's divide Ireland. Especially because most of the people who wanted to stay with Britain were in the north, and because that's where the Scottish Protestants had been settled, and that's where the money was, and that's where the industry was. The British government said, well, let's divide it, let's draw a line, and this will be Northern Ireland, which will still be part of the United Kingdom. The Nationalists thought, this is a temporary solution. Yeah. It's now 100 years later. The British thought, this will solve the problem. It's now 100 years later and the problem is not solved. So it can't be said to have been a great success. And this is what we call partition, dividing the island in two. And it's still causing problems today with the Brexit thingy. So here you have the War of Independence, then 1919 to 21, led to independence for the southern part of the island. The partition was supposed to be a temporary measure. It left a big Catholic majority in the south and a Protestant majority in the north. The south became the Irish Free States, which remained, this was a compromise, it remained a member of the Commonwealth. In theory, still subordinate to the British King in 1922. But an independent legislature, an independent country, a little like Australia today. Australia has the same queen as Britain, but Australia does not depend on Britain for the decisions about its politics. Here you have the Constitution of the Free State of Ireland. English translation, notice the original is in Irish, an important symbol. So that's the Constitution. So this was a it was a very unusual end to a colonial situation. Usually a metropole has a colony and then they have a war for independence. Either the colony wins the war for independence or they lose. And this kind of division is, oh well, let's have a compromise. You didn't win the war for independence, but you didn't lose it. You can have some of the country. It's very, very bizarre. It has to be said that the North had most of the Protestants. The North had most of the people who wanted to remain British. But the North also had the biggest industrial port, Belfast, where all the money was being made. Yeah, so there was economic sides going on there. And of course, in the North, discrimination against the Catholic minority continued. But after the agreement, after the partition, there was then a short civil war between those who accepted the partition, who later will become the political party Fine Gael, and those who wanted immediate reunification of Ireland and a republican form of government, who today would be found in Sinn Féin. If you like this story, there is a film by Ken Loach, Le Vent Se Lève, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, which is about the Irish Civil War. Has anybody seen this this film? Yeah. C'est un peu raide, hein? C'est, les gens ils sont pas très gentils les uns avec les autres. Mais c'est marrant, les films sur les guerres civiles, souvent les gens sont pas très polis. Allez savoir. It's a very good film, like everything Ken Loach makes, in my opinion. Est-ce qu'il y a des fans de Ken Loach dans la salle? Peut-être vous. Est-ce qu'il y a des cinéphiles? Est-ce qu'il y a des gens qui vont au cinéma toutes les semaines? C'est trop cher, ouais. Oui. Oui, je comprends. Hein. Bon, quand vous aurez plus d'argent, faut aller voir ces films. Ok. So these are a couple of newspapers from during the war. War News number 6. And the offer of amnesty. So the situation is somewhat stabilised in the 1920s. At the end of the 1920s, the situation is somewhat stabilised in that the North remains British, the South is independent. Okay, that's now there are still plenty. There were still plenty of people in the 20s as I know. Ireland must be reunified one day, yeah? And they're still hoping for it. But the next big event, then the Second World War, the Irish Republic remained neutral in the Second World War. They were not in favour of Britain and they were not in favour of Germany. You can imagine this must have been a rather difficult situation to maintain when the north of the island is British. And indeed, Winston Churchill, at one point, he said, oh, well, we should invade Ireland. Because, you know, it's dangerous to have a neutral country just next to you. Huh? Because the Germans could have invaded Ireland to get to England. It was possible. But then when Winston Churchill said, perhaps we should invade Ireland, and then people, oh, well, we don't want to fight two wars. Because the Irish would have fought, yeah. The Irish would not have just said, "Oh, okay, we've been invaded." Yeah. That's the history book about it, that neutral island. Now, they were not completely neutral. The Irish were not completely neutral. They helped the British a bit more than they helped the German. But in theory, they were neutral. So, for example, when Adolf Hitler died, when he killed himself, the Irish embassy wrote a polite letter saying, we are very sorry that you have lost your leader, like all embassies do normally. Yeah, like we do today when some dictator in Saudi Arabia dies, but it seems a bit shocking. That's a medal from the... So in Ireland, they don't talk about the Second War. They talk about the national emergency, because they were not at war, they were neutral. Just like Switzerland, of course. It's in 1949 that Ireland decides to go all the way to leave the Commonwealth and declare itself a republic. And because the Irish Republic was neutral during the Second World War, the United Nations would not accept the Irish Republic as a member until 1955. Yeah, they were punished for their neutrality in the Second War. In 1969, then the conflict between dominant Protestant groups and Catholics became much stronger. In 1969, in Northern Ireland, many Protestants had two votes. Catholics had one vote, so many Protestants had two votes. That doesn't sound very democratic. Now, the reason for this is that the system said everybody has one vote, but if you own a business, you have another vote. And the Protestants owned all the businesses. Yeah. So, in fact, it was an undemocratic situation. Si vous aviez une épicerie ou une entreprise, une petite entreprise, vous aviez un deuxième vote dans les années 60 en Irlande du Nord. Et puisque c'était 90% des Protestants qui... C'était une manière d'aider l'intérêt protestant. Violent attacks on Catholics in the north of Ireland, in particular in Belfast, meant that the British government sent the British Army in 1969. At the beginning, when they first arrived, the Catholics were very happy. They said, we are in danger. Many people were killed by Protestant armed groups, and the British Army was seen as neutral when they arrived. However, they quickly became to be seen as enemies of Catholics in the north, because many Catholics were in favour of the unification of Ireland, and therefore were seen as enemies by the British states. In the south, even some government ministers in the south were trying to raise money to support the IRA in the north. So from 1969, then, is the beginning of the Troubles. It's a bit funny, actually. C'est une guerre civile à petit feu pendant 30 ans. Mais les Irlandais appellent ça the Troubles, les soucis. Well, it's quite funny, really, in a way. Over 30 years, I think 3,000 people were killed. Many more were wounded. But also we often forget that there was an enormous amount of material damage. Bombing factories and docks and bombing offices was a major element of IRA tactics. The IRA said, what we need to do is to make the occupation of the North too expensive. Yeah? If we bomb all the offices, the headquarters of the companies who are in the north, yeah, you phoned 2 hours before, get everybody out of the building, there is a bomb, yeah? If we do this, it will make the north will be too expensive. and the British will accept the reunification of Ireland. Spoiler, it didn't work. And it led to the the events of Bloody Sunday. Je crois que j'en avais déjà parlé un petit peu. Yeah, the shooting of demonstrators in Derry by the British Army. Est-ce que j'en avais déjà parlé ou non? No, okay. Okay, Bloody Sunday, en deux mots. There was a demonstration for equal rights for Catholics, and the British Army attacked the demonstration, and I think 11 people were killed. And this changed the entire situation in Northern Ireland, because these people were killed and thousands of people watched. In fact, it was sitting in City HLM, and hundreds of people watched from the windows, and they could see down, and they could see the army shoot these people dead. And then the next day, the army said, "We were obliged to shoot in self-defense." And the government said, "They were obliged to shoot in self-defense." And the newspaper said, "They were obliged to shoot in self-defense." But hundreds of people had watched it happen, and of course, it was not in self-defense. And this changed the situation completely, because before Bloody Sunday, there was a debate in Ireland among the nationalists. Some people said, "We need a political solution. We need petitions, we need demonstrations, we need elections." And some people said, "No, we need a military solution. We need the IRA, and we need to fight back." And there was a debate. After Bloody Sunday, there was no debate. If anybody said, "We need demonstrations," you watched your children shot dead in front of the houses. How stupid are you? The easiest job in the entire world in 1972 was recruitment agent for the IRA. Literally, people came and knocked on your door and said, "Can I join?" Because it appeared that political change was impossible, because at this demonstration they had shot them. And indeed, 30 years later, the British government officially apologised and officially recognised that the young men who were shot were not armed and were not dangerous, and they were shot in the back. Yeah, so this is today, this is the official position of the British government. But in the 1970s, this was not the case. So Bloody Sunday was this enormous accelerator of the conflict in the north. And in the south, that's the British embassy. A crowd of people went to the British embassy and just burnt it down. So you can see quite a high level of tension when you're having your embassies burnt down. In 1972, the Irish Republic joined the European Union at the same time as Britain. By quite a clear majority, 1,000,000 to 200,000. And this is where we get to a terrible period in the 1970s, and then at the end of the 1980s, then the beginnings of the period of the Celtic Tiger, which I was mentioning to you. So we're now going to look at a video about the end of the Celtic Tiger period.